WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. It says so right here. We are in Baltimore, Baltimore City, with the mayor of Baltimore City. Brandon Scott joins us, all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. I'm wearing my lottery gear as well as my mask. Crab cakes are coming this segment per the mayor. Don Moeller, of course, riding shotgun here. Don, you and I spent so many segments. Every time we bring a politician on, local, people that want to be politicians, crime is the issue. So, Don and I talk about that probably more than anything, and I'm sure in your meetings, this certainly would happen in Little Italy, certainly would happen at the church earlier this week. We're tired of all of it. We are, you know.
And I think we say to the mayor, we had... certainly one of the critics in this area of one of your opponents, but again, everybody plays nice in the sandbox once we're done. We had Thoreau Vignarajah on, and Thoreau really paid you a compliment, and we said, Mayor, we were going to share it. Thoreau said, there's no doubt in my mind. For he played you a compliment in a number of ways. He said he thought you were one of the most ethical public servants that he's ever encountered. He said, I don't think Mayor Scott has a self-serving bone in his body, and his heart's in the right place. And he said, I know that he takes every single homicide personally, that he feels each and every one. And then, of course, the rule we're going to say, but we're just not getting there. So what Nestor said is they're probably, and he showed us a chart that showed even if you waved the magic wand tomorrow and cut our homicides in half, he had a chart that said we would still be third per capita in the nation in homicides. Now, I haven't dived into those numbers, but he sent us the chart. It appeared pretty appropriate. I mean, they're pretty accurate. What? 1 year in, you got a crime strategy. You've announced it. I want to give you some oxygen here to say to our listeners, stick with me. It may not feel like it, but we are making progress.
Yeah, I think Don, and I think Thoreau knows that, right? Because he knows me, that I spend so much time focused on this issue. And if you ask me what am I frustrated about, it's going to be about this, right? Because, and I think this is where I think everyone needs to take a step back, right? What we can't afford to happen now is for us to, to go back to what we used to do, right? Because this is the reality. And the reality that I think sometimes we forget. The reality is that we know the old way doesn't work, right? As you know, as Dr. Bunley, who works for me now, says, I'm the first mayor, Don, that actually had to live through all of this, right? No disrespect to the other folks. They either were older, right? So they didn't.
Mayor, you talked all the time. Shared with you. You talked about going to that Buster Murrow and having to walk around chalk lines as young man.
Yeah, but not even just that. When you grow up in it in the way that I have to, right? Like, either mayors weren't from here originally, they moved here, they were older, they weren't black. It's different. When you've been dealing with the violence, had the gun pointed at you, ducked the bullets, been sat on the curb with putting the handcuffs just because you were outside, you see it in a different way. But for me, where we're at now, and yes, we announced our comprehensive violence reduction strategy, which is the first time the city's ever had that, gentlemen, right? We've never had every agency working towards reducing violence. And one of our critical mistakes that we've allowed to happen over the years, in my opinion, is that we solely put reducing violence in Baltimore on the shoulders of the two people, the police commissioner and the mayor. And what I have been doing is now letting everyone know that, listen, I'm going to be responsible for the things I'm responsible for. And in this case, that is the police. That are the other city agencies. But we have to bring everyone together. And what frustrates me is that that we're not at the point where we want to be. Yes, I could sit here and tell you guys that, yes, total violent crime in this city is down, right?
Senator McCray came on with us. He's going to be joining us here later talking about that.
Yeah, total violent crime in the city is down, right? I could also tell you guys, in all honesty, that in actuality, right, in actual people that have been quote-unquote murdered in 2021, there were less than in 2020. But the truth is that, well, we have to follow the guidelines on how murders are reported.
These are the UCR statistics.
The UCR statistics. The truth is that the feds have added 19 incidents that occurred in other years to this year's number.
Well, see, I think hey, Mayor, I'm going to ask you to repeat that because I thought that this
I don't
is
understand
where,
this.
Well, let me explain to you. I'm going to have the mayor explain it, but I want to tell why I think it's important, Nestor. I fought this battle all the time in Baltimore County, and I kept saying, folks, at the end of the year, I want you to pick up on this.
Yeah.
People want to know how many people were murdered
this
in this calendar year, not some cold case from 1976. Now, pick up on that, man.
I'll give you – this is how it works, right? So we've had 19 incidents as of this morning from prior years that have been ruled a homicide this year, right? And I'll say, Don, that for me, okay, if someone got shot at the end of 2020 and they died a few weeks later, that's different, right? But where some frustration comes in, Nestor, is that one of our cases, our prior year cases this year, happened the month after I was born, right?
So
someone was shot. Someone was shot in 1984. They live. They died this year, and now they're saying, oh, this murder happens for 2021, not 1884. That's what Dawn's talking about.
That doesn't even make sense.
Talk to the feds. It makes absolutely no sense to us.
It makes it very difficult to communicate. That's why it's important.
It's hard to communicate that out, but the reality is that when you see the numbers that we are today, sitting at 299, only 280 of them, which is 282 too many, happened this year. But it's hard to communicate that out. And Don, I'm glad you brought that up.
I'm not really interested about 19 or 20 murders from 30 years ago.
I guess you wanted to know about the ones this year. Dawn's saying.
Right.
Listen, we spent time with – we had the governor down at the boatyard down in Annapolis and talking about, all right, criminal does something awful, pulls a gun on you, if it happened, goes to jail. Comes back out on the street.
I'm glad you brought that up,
Nestor. That's not Brandon or Commissioner Harrison or.
Yeah.
But they're walking downtown, and my wife might be a victim, and whoever these perpetrators are, it's the state of Maryland.
Who does that?
Many times when there's repeat offenders. It happens in the city. It's born of the city. It's blamed on the city.
Well, it doesn't just happen in the city. Let me be very clear about this, and I think your listeners have to understand this, right? The mayor controls one public safety agency. That's the police department. Parole and probation. Corrections, all of that, court commissioners, all of that stuff is either with the state, meaning the governor.
And the governor was not very happy, Mayor, when we brought that up with him. He did not like, because our point of questioning with the governor was...
Well, he's not used to getting asked tough questions.
Right. No, that's not the reality.
He didn't like
he
that.
He didn't want any more questions, and this is why, right?
And I said this to you guys when I talked with you last year. Immediately after winning the primary, I reached out to the governor and said, I want to talk to you about crime. He said he can't talk to me until after the general. I thought that was ridiculous. We're talking about Baltimore. We know how general elections go. But fine. After the general, I reached out. No. It took us to have that public pressure for us to have the meeting. And what, for me, listen, I am the grandson of a pig farming Republican. Party doesn't matter to me. I could care less. What I do care about is how people are working or not working for my people in Baltimore.
Okay, Tom.
Hold on, take a break.
No, we got to
look at the mayor.
We got to finish.
Wait a minute. We're going
to
finish.
Even order this. You got to be the mayor to get two crab cakes.
We got to finish this.
Hold that up to the camera, man.
This is the best crab cake in the city, of course.
All right.
But mayor's going to finish this very important point.
We're very important. We're talking about crime.
We're going to finish that point.
Here we go.
But because it was critically important for me that we restart the Criminal Justice Coordinating Council that the governor ended in 2018. Now, I will say, he and I agree. I felt like the prior administration wasn't dealing with it in the right way, too. But when my police officers, I myself was on the scene of a homicide last summer, right, where there was a young gentleman killed with an ankle bracelet on. That means that the governor's folks who monitor those folks should have been able to tell us that this person was not where they were supposed to be.
Mayor, that person
would have been dead, but he would have been in jail. So bringing that group together, which we've done, Nestor, is critically important because you hear it from all of these folks, and I'm going to tell you guys this, and everyone's going to be mad at me. You hear from years on years, like, oh, it's the police department's fault that they're back out on the street. It's the state's attorney's fault.
It's the mayor's fault.
It's the mayor's fault. It's parole and probation. It's the judge's fault. When I got into office, we're talking about gun cases, and we're talking about NAR process. And I said, Tell me how many of these cases are null pros because the police department messed up. No one can tell me. Tell me how many are null pros because the state's attorney decided to plead down. No one can tell me. No one could tell me any of it. So that meant it was just a bunch of hyperbole and finger pointing. And now we got that group back together, Nestor, because we are continuously 30% of our victims are on parole or probation, right?
30%.
We are continuing to see.
Start to do that math.
Yeah, right? We are continuing to see, unfortunately, and now we're all back at the table, and I'm grateful that the state folks are at the table. But it shouldn't be that someone is carjacking a car with an ankle bracelet on and then ends up dead. Like, those kind of connections. It shouldn't be that the police department arrests someone for murder in April and then later in a year they're on Greenmount arresting the same person in a car, carjacked car, with a gun. It shouldn't be that on Memorial Day weekend we had a triple murder in Park Heights and one of the victims was arrested in Baltimore County with a gun for a DV incident the month before. Those gaps have to close, and let me be very clear.
Well, criminals are criminals, right?
Yeah, it doesn't matter. But we have to all be at the table and realize, as Don said, that it's bigger than the city, it's bigger than the mayor, especially in a place where the state has so much control. Everyone has to work together and stop all the finger pointing. We have to be adults to deal with the issue.
Mayor, I want to stick, and we're gonna get to these crab cakes. We're gonna eat and talk. Going to your, first of all, I applaud your effort on parole and probation. It's the one thing in 3 years, every time Nestor and I have talked to criminal justice experts, whether they're local, mm-hmm. whether they're out of state, or whether they're in college, they all point to parole and probation as something that would. I mean, Jim Smith, who again had worked in the county and the city, points to that all the time as an area that he thinks could have immediate impact.
Well, so I thank you. Know who the bad guys are.
I thank you for focusing
that,
on that.
Right?
What part of your crime plan, and we're going to get some utensils here soon, what part of your crime plan do you think, really a two-part question, what part do you think might yield some short-term results? And then which part do you think is most important for long-term results? Because it's really a short-term and a long-term issue, right?
So it's both. It's short, medium, and right. long. The short-term things are the things that we've been doing. The things around focusing in on the folks with the guns. The gun trafficking initiative that we now have, where we know that 60% of the guns that the police department recovered last year came from other states. 84% of them came from other states and other counties in Maryland, right? And that's why we have the Firearm Intelligence Unit working on that, making sure that the police department continues to focus in on their microzones and their at-risk individuals, those small groups. And that's why we're doing the group violence reduction strategy that will have both long, medium, and short term, because when you're focused in on the people that are the most likely, Nestor, to be the victim or the perpetrator of violence, that's who you focused on. Not everyone that looks like me. Focus on the people that you know are committing it. That's going to have the impact. But the long term stuff is going to be the things that we're talking about. The work that we're now starting, which is a unique program that we're excited about, where we're going to be training young women and young men who are in prison, right? Job training for them before they come home, so that
Nestor, what is the qualification? I ask this all the time. Like,
that's Nestor's question.
When the day that the guy who held the gun to your head, the day they were going to let him out of jail, what's the pre-qualification for letting him out, other than just he did 5 years or whatever that period of time is? And then when someone comes out, I mean, I was in Miami a number of years ago. I had a guy, I was standing outside of a club at 11 o'clock at night to go in to see a band play. And a guy came up to me on the street and said, I just got sprung from jail an hour ago. I'm like, maybe tonight's my unlucky night. You know right. what I'm saying? Because I'm thinking, and I thought about that for going on 10 years now. That happened to me in Miami. I thought, that guy got out of jail. Maybe making a story up, but whatever the story is, there is that first hour you're out of jail.
Well, you've been.
And that second hour and that second day, and you got to feed yourself. And I don't know that the state's doing a great job on whatever it is that allows that citizen back out on the street with your wife, your daughter, my wife.
Well, you've been consistent on that, Nestor, since day one. Probably way back when we discussed with the mayor when he was running for mayor. You've talked with other officials. You've talked with former governor and Mayor O'Malley about this issue. And you've been consistent is And I think you ask it not in a snarky or sarcastic way. I think you ask it in a legitimate way. In other words, are we really training the person in prison and then connecting with them to connect them with housing and a job? Right.
Or are we just holding folks in there for that time?
Nestor's question.
And that's where for me, I just determined that, Nestor, we can no longer as a city wait for someone else to do it. We have to say, okay, we want to do this with these group of people that are coming home to our city. Let us work with them. Because the reality is, if you don't do that, we're supposed to be rehabilitating people, right? And we know, I went through my personal experience with a young man that robbed me, right? We know that those kind of gaps are still there.
You in touch with him?
I am in touch with his family.
In jail or on the street?
Oh, he's out. He's back out. He's
got a job, got a life. The whole deal.
He's doing fine.
Good. All right.
So, but it's about making sure that folks are ready to not go back. If you don't have something, if they don't have access to the opportunity to do something different, especially when you think about folks who are coming home, and this is something that you guys should talk to some of our state folks about. They've been great people, like Senator Hayes and the great folks at the Center for Urban Families, thinking about the burden. If I'm coming home and I get a job through Center for Urban Families and now my checks are $100 short, not for child support to go to the kid, but to go to the state for the time I was in jail, you're basically pushing people back into the underworld, right? We have to think about those kind of things and have these folks be able to get these jobs, because and this is why we are also going to be looking at how we prioritize and reward companies who are willing to hire our re-entering citizens, right, on
not
jobs.
Easy to do. Not easy
no,
to do.
It isn't, but it can be done. So many of them do it and they say these are some of the best workers that we have, because most people do not want to go back to that life. But if we as a city, as a state, as a country don't change the way we think about how we're rehabilitating people and getting them in a better sense, we're going to keep people on that hamster wheel, and we know how that ends up.
All right, we're going to take a break. Mayor Brandon Scott is here. We have crab cakes from Coco's.
We have the best crab cakes in
Boston. Well, I want to talk about this for a minute, because before I get in here and start destroying it, Marcelo's going to join us, I think, maybe even for the last segment here. This is the first – I've had a lot of crab cakes, Don, and I went all over the state. I went Eastern Shore, Western Maryland. I did 42 crab cakes in 30 days in August, inspired by you sitting in Fadley's and saying, I want to try the Coco's crab cake, and I'm thinking, well, I should try every crab cake. I have not seen a lot of places serve this the way my mother would serve it. And my mother would serve it with a proper tomato, and not just the tomato. The pepper is already on it. So this is the way my mother would approve of this. So, Marcelo, wherever you are, my mother would say this is proper. So we're here at Coco's.
Mother knows best.
We are in Lauraville. Knows best. This is one of the great areas in our city. I want you to talk about that.
Yeah.
You found Coco's.
And I live in Northeast Baltimore. So, listen, Northeast Baltimore is a treasure for Baltimore City. Not only do we have Coco's, we obviously have Morgan State. We have Baltimore's largest and most applied to high school, Merville High School, not City. We also have City College this year. We have Hearn Run Park. And we have neighborhoods that are so diverse.
Hamilton right over there.
There, the mayor teased it up for the next segment, because I read an article this morning on the way here that said, that blew some holes in the census theory, where we know Baltimore lost population. But there are a number of areas in the city, and not just downtown, that are thriving. Yep. Want to have you talk about that.
All right, we're going to break. Let's get a crack.
All right.
The mayor's here. Brandon Scott is here. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. Let yourself play. We're going to be playing Black Friday. We're going to be in Harford County up at Conrad's on Friday with Harford County Executive Barry Glassman. And then we are at Pappas in Cockeysville after that. I'm Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. Baltimore Positive. And Coco's Crab Cakes. Delicious.